I wish I had the ability to impress how important it is that we understand the distinction that we're working on this lesson. We have high school people in here, college-age folks in here, and other young married couples who may not have faced some of the issues that result out of a failure to understand what we're talking about in this lesson. Brethren, understand oftentimes that the church is not the building, but the church is comprised of people. But because that is true, and it is true, sometimes brethren mistakenly conclude that when the people who comprise the church do something, the church is doing it. Or whatever people who comprise the church are authorized to do in the New Testament, therefore the church is authorized to do it. That may sound like a pretty dry subject, especially to some of our young people. But here we are today. We're meeting here. There are other churches with Church of Christ on the sign that are meeting in other places in our area. And one of the reasons that that's the case is because of a failure to understand what we're studying right here. You're going to drive up some churches that say Church of Christ, and you're going to see playgrounds, and you're going to see buses, and you're going to see what's called a fellowship hall or a family life center. Now, 40, 50 years ago, those brothers would make an effort to defend that by the scriptures. I don't know if they'd even make an effort today. But when the effort was made, it was partially on this basis. They would turn to verses that authorized Christians to get together for entertainment, or Christians to eat together, or Christians to be involved in social work together, and therefore conclude, since the church is made up of Christians, therefore the church could do it. Same thing true with the letters. Letters were written to Christians, like the Galatian letter, or to churches. And they would assume that since it was written to Christians or to churches, that anything those letters authorized churches to do, those very things. So this lesson and the next lesson is very important in understanding. And I hope at least especially I want to stress on the young people in our audience, if nothing else, put these things we're studying in the back of your mind. Someday you may be facing issues that these very things we're studying will help you with. You'll note on the first page of our lesson, the third paragraph down, if no distinction exists between what members do individually and what they do as the Lord's collective, then the church has no distinctive work. Can you think of anything that would be contrary to that statement? Is it authorized for Christians to get together and go to Fiesta, Texas? So can the church buy a bus to take people to Fiesta, Texas?
No.
And if somebody asks you, why not, could you explain why not? Especially if they said, you said Christians could do it. And in fact, let's just say that the elders say, the Christians in this church are going to go to Fiesta, Texas. And so the members of this church are going to go to Fiesta, Texas. Don't you believe the church is made up of the members? You do, don't you? Well, then if the members can do it, can't the church do it? That's the kind of reasoning that's done. What do you say in response to that? We don't want to say, well, the church I go to doesn't believe that. That's not a very good response, or I wasn't taught that. We want to be able to understand what the Bible teaches on these things. So we are going through this series of points. We went through the first 5 points on your outline, and we'll not rehearse that. But if you weren't here for that class, I'd encourage you to either on your computer or download onto a flash drive or CD or something and listen to the class from Wednesday night, because it'll be a good foundation for what we're studying here and in the next lesson. Okay, so let's turn to Acts 4. Now, on this point number 5, excuse me. All members acting collectively in Christ is the church acting. And we gave a couple of illustrations of that, Philippians 4 and 1 Timothy 5:16. And what would be the difference in saying, If all the members of this church went to Fiesta, Texas, the church went to Fiesta, Texas, or the church, it went to Fiesta, Texas.
Steve, what was the last thing you said? You
lost. I lost you?
Yes, you did. What was the last thing you said?
What would be the difference in saying the church went to Fiesta, Texas, and the church, it went to Fiesta, Texas?
It.
I-T.
Well, for one thing, that's poor grammar.
It is? What's poor grammar about it? If it's poor grammar, what's wrong with Paul's grammar in 1 Timothy 5:16? Read it.
It's collective, acting together versus individuals.
The first statement is a legitimate statement, but it's confusing because you're talking about the church members acting independently. They may be acting concertedly, but not collectively as one. In other words, it's not through the church fund. It's not in the oversight of the elders. The church, if we supplied the verb, we'd say the church, they went to Fiesta, Texas. That is, the members of the church went to Fiesta, Texas. It has nothing to do with the work of the church. After the assembly today, some of you are going to get together and eat. How many does it take before the church is involved? Is it a matter of number? It isn't. And so here's an example. But can we say the church, it went? 1 Timothy 5:16, what does it say? What's the it in that verse?
The church.
The church as a unit that it may relieve. And we use that verse to illustrate that if every Christian in a church took care of their widowed mother or grandmother, based on 1 Timothy 5:16, it would not be doing what that verse talks about. Because it said, do not let the church be charged or burdened with that. Only when the church did it as a unit, through its collective fund or an agent or under its oversight, would the church be doing it. Yes, Mike? Look at 1 Timothy 5:16. Fortunately, you weren't here with us tonight. I explained this, but we'll touch on it briefly and we'll move on. 1 Timothy 5:16. Look at question number 3 on your outline, on your questions. How many members of a local church are obligated to take care of their aged widows? Verse 16.
You said number 3 with the outline?
On the questions, on lesson 3. How many, based on 1 Timothy 5:16, you don't even need the lesson, just look at the verse. How many members of the church are obligated to take care of their aged widows? Everyone that has an aged widow that needs help. We illustrated. Let's say you have a small church of 10 families, 5 families, 10 people, whatever. If every one of those people in that church, in fact, it could be all women. This church here at one time was comprised only of women during the war. That's what I was told. So if every member of a church had an aged mother or grandmother and they took care of them, could you say the church, they are taking care of their widowed mothers and grandmothers? No? Well, what is the people?
The members are taking care of their mothers.
Could we say the members of the church are taking care of their widowed mothers and grandmothers? Could we say that? No? They're not taking care of them?
The church is a collective.
Not necessarily. The church is a collective, but you can view a collective individually. If we say the family are large, what do we mean?
Individual
people in it are large. That is proper grammar. But if we say the family is large, We're saying it's a large group. We're looking at it as a unit. And if every member, 1 Timothy 5:16, if every member is taking care of a widowed mother and grandmother, are the members of the church taking care of their mothers and grandmothers? Yes. Now, if you just leave off members of, you could say the church is, meaning the members of.
I don't know you mean that.
You wouldn't know it by the statement itself, and yes, you used the plural verb or added the members of, but it is a legitimate statement. And that's what leads to confusion. When you say the church does something, you're limiting it in your thinking, it sounds like, to collective work. But a collective noun can refer to people doing something independently. We'll talk about, I think I've got it in here, maybe later in the lesson. The church gives. Is that true?
Yes.
Does that mean the individual members give or what? Right. Let each one of you lay by in his store. 1 Corinthians 16. Let each one of you. That individual? If each person, when that tray is passed, contributes, have the members of the church gave? Has anything been done as a unit? One. No. No. Now that fund, when it's used to do something, now we're acting as a unit. Like Philippians 4, like 1 Timothy 5. In 1 Timothy 5:16, so the church must not be burdened so that it may assist. If there's no difference, then the church was assisting when every person in it gave to their widowed mothers and grandmothers. But he makes a difference. I didn't. He makes the difference. And so, how does the church it do something? Okay, let's go to Acts chapter 4. The congregation, verse 32, of those who believed were one heart and soul, not one of them claimed that anything belonged to him was his own. If you stop there, take that verse out of context. Did anybody have his own individual wife? That's my wife. You see the importance of continuing in the context. What's he talking about? Not anybody claimed everything was his own. This verse is also used to support communism. This verse doesn't support communism. He's talking about the things that are contributed became, as he says in the rest of the verse, common. This version says, but all things were common to them. The King James said they had all things in common, and similarly the American Standard. They had all things in common. In other words, they did something to make some possessions common. Okay, now, look on your lesson question number 4. A, not one of them claimed that anything belonged to him was his what? Own. But all things were common. In the text, O-W-N, own, is contrasted with what? Common. Own versus common. Isn't that in the text? Okay. So what does common mean? What?
Not your own. Something shared.
Okay. Something shared. Belonging to all. That's the idea. So instead of saying, this is mine, we put it into a fund, what was happening. And now, we own it. It's not just mine, it's ours. Now, when you have a fund that does not belong to me or to you, who's going to determine how it's spent? Look down, if you will, in the text at verse 35. What did they do with their proceeds from their, what if they sold land or whatever it was they contributed, what did they do with it?
Laid it at the
apostles' feet. You mean threw it on their toes? Just gave it to them for their own personal benefit? Put it under their authority. They are the common oversight as to how these funds are to be distributed. It's not the apostles' money. It's not Peter's money. It's not Barnabas' money. It belongs to everybody. So now there has to be an oversight over those funds that the group agrees with. Okay? Look, this is not uncommon to what we do every day. If, let's say that Dylan's going to Houston. And so, let's say that I've got a bill in Houston that I want to pay. I give him $25. Say, here, Dylan, pay my bill. I gave him $25. And Austin's got a bill in Houston, and his is $10. Says, here, Dylan, here's $10. And Dylan has a bill in Houston, and it's $35, and he's going to pay it. So he gets to Houston, he's got $35 in his pocket. He pays his bill. Is that okay?
No.
Why not? It's in his pocket.
It's,
who's that money belong to? That's in his pocket. To me and to Austin. That's right. Now, let's suppose that Austin, no agreements here. Now let's suppose that Dylan and Austin and I have a little business. We're in it together. It's not his business or my business. It's our business. And we have a $35, or say a $25 debt in town and a $10 debt in town. And we say, here, Dylan, I'm going to contribute $20 and Austin $10. And Dylan, he's going to the Navy. He don't have $5. So he said, okay, I'm going to put my $5 in. So now you got $35. Say, just pay our bills, Dylan. What can he do with that money legitimately now? Can he choose between the two? He can't he? But he can't go pay his own bill. But he can pay the bill of the company because now it belongs to us. And we have agreed for Dylan to make a choice. He's our common oversight. We do this all the time in business or whatever else it may be. So here you have a case. Now, to further confirm that, go to chapter 5. Church what?
Roman cells or bank cells or wood cells?
Roman cells.
Roman cells.
Rock cells.
How's that?
Because everybody's selling what they have.
Well, if whatever the members can do, the church can do, what's wrong with that? Good point, David. You see, the members were doing something, but the church wasn't doing it. And yet you could say the church does it in our language. The church, they were selling. That is, the members of the church. But there's a difference made when they put it into a common fund. Now, when you get to chapter 5 and verse 4, you remember Ananias and Sapphira. So Barnabas had sold some land and contributed. Ananias, I don't know if he's driven by pride or what, he sells some land, and he takes part of the price of the land and contributes it. Nothing wrong with that. What's wrong with it is that he lied about it. But now when Peter addresses him in chapter 5 and verse 4, question 4c, what two things would not be true of Ananias' money once it was put into the common fund?
Wasn't
his own. Wasn't his own, and?
Not under his oversight
anymore. See, Peter said, verse 4, while it remained, That in the this version puts in italics unsold. That's the idea, unsold or actually uncontributed. While it remained, before, in other words, it was put in the common fund, did it not remain your own? How do you know it was not his own once he contributed it?
It says it right here.
Where? What verse tells you it's not his own once he contributed it?
4:32.
What did it become?
Common.
Before he put it in there, it was his own. Now it's common. It belongs to everybody. Okay? And he said, after it was sold, was it not under your control? How do you know it's not under his control once it's in the common fund? Give me a verse.
35.
It's laid at the apostles' feet. It's under their control now. It's in the common fund under a common oversight. So this is an important verse to illustrate that right here in the Bible we have this difference made. Now let's look at some of our other questions here. Question number two. If an American citizen goes to a foreign country and kills someone, they don't declare war on America. But if the USA official sent an American citizen to a foreign country in a USA Air Force plane and drops a bomb on them that we sent him with, they would likely start a war whether anyone was killed or not. Why? What's the difference?
He was doing it with the government authority.
Doing it by government authority the second time. He was acting not as himself alone, was he? He was acting as an appointed agent of the government. It was the USA dropping the bomb. Does that mean every citizen went and dropped the bomb? No, they did it through an agent. And other countries recognized the difference in that. They did it as a it, as a one, as a unit, under common oversight of the United States government. We recognize this. Governments recognize this. What if 10 Americans go kill somebody else in another country? Does that necessarily start a war?
No.
But one can start a war. Isn't that interesting? If he's acting as agent of the government. Ronnie?
Well, the other half of that is that if one person, one American, goes to another country and kills someone, he's guilty of murder and will either probably either spend the rest of his life in prison or be executed. If a soldier goes over there during a war and kills somebody and survives to the end of that war, he has not committed murder, and even if he's been captured by the enemy, will be sent home.
Excellent, excellent illustration. The difference in acting as an individual and acting as an agent. Same guy. I mean, you've had soldiers over there who act unbecoming. Kill somebody, rape somebody. But they're not doing that by the authority of the government. And they do suffer the penalty. Okay, look back at question one. I don't think we answered all of those, and this goes along with what we're looking at. Look back at Matthew 18, if you will. Matthew 18. Matthew 18, we ask the question on the sheet, how many Christians acting in verse 15?
One.
How many Christians acting in verse 16? Two or more. Okay. Up to verse 17, has church action taken place?
No.
Now, if we do not make a difference, the very difference this lesson is talking about, in Christians doing something and the church doing something as a collective, as one. The church has acted, hasn't it? Hasn't it? Have the members of the church done anything?
Yes.
Yes. How many members of the church does it take before the church acts? Is it a matter of number? No, it's a how they act. So two or more of when. But according to verse 17, he hasn't heard the church, even though he's heard more than one Christian. Now, when you get to up verse 17, it says, if he refuses to listen to them, that's plural, then take verse 17, tell it to the church. And if he refused to listen even to the church. Look, I didn't make this distinction. The Lord did. There's a difference in one Christian doing something, two or more Christians doing something, and the church doing something. What is the difference? Is it number? Or is it the point we're trying to make in this lesson? It's how they act. They act collectively as a unit, as one. Now look, I asked this question. I know my question is not clear, at least the first one. This rebellious man was to hear the church. How could this be accomplished? Let me explain what I meant on number one. One way the man could hear the church, it says in verse 17, if he refused to listen even to the church, is by every member of the church going and talking to the man. That'd be one way for him to hear the church, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Is that practical?
No.
Is everybody in the church equipped to do this?
No.
Okay, now, in Philippians 2:25, go to Philippians 2. Paul's in prison. Epaphroditus comes. What is Epaphroditus called in verse 25 relative to the Philippian church? They're what?
Messenger.
What does the footnote say on messenger? Apostle. He wasn't one of the 12 apostles. Apostle just means one sent on a mission. He is their agent. It's not just a personal trip he's taking because he loves Paul. He does love Paul. And an agent may be involved and interested in what he's doing. But the point is, in this case, Paul recognizes that the Philippian church, they can't all travel to Rome to help Paul in his imprisonment. So they evidently, I don't know if Epaphroditus took the funds that he talked about in chapter 4 or if he just went there to render some other kind of service. But he is the church's apostle. He is their agent. And look what he says. He said, he is your messenger and minister to my need. Now look down at verse 30. In verse 30, whose service did Epaphroditus render? The Philippian church, your service. Your service. If Epaphroditus just said, I need to go help Paul, and he takes off to Rome and meets Paul and helps him, is it Epaphroditus' service or the church's service? Huh? His. What if three Christians from Philippi go to help Paul? Is it the church's service or their service? Theirs. But now when one man went, as an apostle of the church, representing the church, he is their agent. Just like when we sent Dylan to pay our bills with our money, now he's acting as our agent. Okay, so he clearly you see deficient in your service. Look at chapter 4 and verse 18. I have received everything in full and have an abundance. I'm amply supplied, having received from Epaphroditus what you sent. Some don't think that he took these things. I favor that idea, but be that as it may, whatever that he received was a contribution of the church at Philippi. And you see that back in verse 15. You Philippians, at the first preaching of the gospel after I left Macedonia, no church shared with me. Now Mike said, how do you know? It's sometimes difficult to know because of our English language. But the verb here, shared with me, or communicated with me, King James, or had fellowship with me, some version, is a singular verb. A collective noun can have either a singular or plural verb, both in English and in their language. The Bible is written in. So church, it shared with me is what he meant, just like 1 Timothy 5:16. Which points to what was the nature of this that he received? Was it just every Philippian dug in their pocket and said, here's $5? And said, you're going over there anyway, here's my $5. Is that it?
No.
You're going to town anyway, Dylan, here's my $5. Is that the case?
No.
What was it? They made up a fund, and it was an it. It belonged to them. It was common. And it, the church, shared with Paul. And so now back in our text in Matthew 18. If he refuses to hear the church, one way he could hear the church for every member to go. Did Paul hear the church in Philippi when Epaphroditus came and brought whatever message that they had for him? Yes, as an agent. And the church could appoint an agent, an elder, a godly member. They've confirmed this man's guilt. Go talk to him. See if you can get the man to repent. This time, now this could be the same man as verse 15, couldn't it? But in verse 15, is he acting as the church? Does the sinner hear the church in verse 15? No. 3 weeks later, that same man goes back, but this time as an agent of the church. Does the man hear the church this time? Yes. Yes. So, here the text makes the difference. There's another way that he could hear the church. Look at 1 Corinthians 7:1. How did Paul hear the church at Corinth? They had some questions. How did he hear the church?
By a letter.
So you can send a letter as a representative of the church. Look at Acts chapter 15. In Acts chapter 15, remember that there were some teachers came from Jerusalem to Antioch trying to teach the Christians they had to be circumcised to keep the law of Moses, the Gentile Christians. Paul and Barnabas got a big debate with them, and so the brethren sent Paul and Barnabas to Jerusalem about this matter. Well, Paul wouldn't have even went, but the Holy Spirit said, go. We learned that from Galatians 2. So Paul goes to Jerusalem, Barnabas goes, Titus goes to Jerusalem about this issue, and thus you have the discussion that you have in Acts 15. After the discussion had taken place, when the elders and apostles of the church in Jerusalem, were trying to convince the brethren about the truth of this matter, and evidently some unity was reached about that. The apostles and elders already knew the truth. Paul already knew the truth, but they were trying to convince the church. So then, verse 22, seemed good to the apostles and elders with the whole church to send men from among them, to choose men from among them to send to Antioch with Paul and Barnabas. Verse 25, it seemed good to us, having become of one mind, to select men to send to you with our beloved Barnabas and Paul. Verse 27, we have sent Judas and Silas, who themselves will report the same thing by word of mouth. Now, when this letter was received, could they say the members of the church in Jerusalem sent this letter? Yes. When the Philippian church contributed to Paul, did the Philippians contribute to Paul? What does chapter 4:15 say? You Philippians, plural. But could it also be said that they heard from the church in Jerusalem that it did not authorize these men to go? This was a letter representing that group. Not just the men who maybe signed it or something like that, or the guy who penned it out. So, This is a difference that you find in common everyday language. You find it in the scriptures. And if we don't try to get our thinking clarified, we're not going to know the difference in the work of the church and the work of individual members of the church working independently or concurrently. Question number five. The United States of America is made up of its citizens. Its money comes from its citizens. A citizen may write a check on his bank account to buy himself a car. But if he attempted to use funds from the U.S. account to buy himself a car, he'd be thrown into the penitentiary. Why? What? Didn't he put the money in there?
No longer under his oversight.
It doesn't belong to him. Who does it belong to? Who is the USA? Us. Belongs to us. So I can say how it's spent, can't I? Since it belongs to me. You'd like that, wouldn't you? You'd like to be able to say how it's spent. But you can't. We have a common oversight. Whether it's a good or bad one is another issue. But we have a common oversight. It may be that that guy contributed $15,000 in taxes and his car only cost $15,000. There's a difference in him writing a check out of his own personal account and writing a check on the government account to buy that car. Does that happen in business? And what? You hear about it all the time in the news, don't you? Somebody in business, they're in charge of a common fund. They start using that fund for their personal business. I'll tell you what. Court knows the difference. If you're on the jury, you'd be told to know the difference. If you don't think there's a difference, try it. We won't see you for a while. There's a difference. Could a United States citizen use a car purchased with government funds for family vacation? Question number six.
It
does depend on what he's authorized to do. But let's suppose he just said, "This, I've been driving this car all week. I want to go to Florida. I'm going to take this car and go to Florida."
No.
Why not?
He has no authorization.
Does it belong to him?
No.
No, it doesn't, does it? We understand this. And it's not under his oversight. Why are you putting me in this there, David?
I like putting it.
Okay, go ahead.
All right, so we all contribute to, say, every Sunday, right?
Right.
And you say you put in $2,000 last week, and you're not the one that adds it up with the bank, but say you go ahead and you say, "Well, I contributed $2,000. Well, I need a new laptop for my PowerPoints on my preaching. I'm going to go ahead and buy that. The church will be okay with that." Is that wrong?
Good illustration. If I put in $2,000, can I just say, "I'm going to take out $2,000, my personal purchase"? No. Because once it's in there, it is, what's the word used in Acts 4?
Common.
Common. It's common. And what did Peter say about when it's common? Two things in Acts 5:4? You don't own it and you don't control it. Okay. Now look at Philippians. Philippians 1:5. Paul is thanking them for their participation in the gospel from the first day until now. In chapter 2:25-30, he talks about this messenger they sent, Epaphroditus, to render, verse 30, their service, your service to me. And then in chapter 4:14, he goes back in time. He said, "You've done well to share with me in my affliction. You yourselves also know, Philippians, that at the first preaching of the gospel, after I left Macedonia, no church shared with me in the matter of giving and receiving, but you alone. For even in Thessalonica, you sent a gift more than once for my needs." So, What does the word fellowship mean?
Striving together as one.
As one?
Or giving care.
So if we all get in the same car and pile up and go to Fiesta, Texas, we're not having fellowship?
No, as one.
Well, it's got to be as one before we share. There's something we have as one, as Linda points out, something in common. And in this case, it was the contribution that was made to Paul. That's the thing she's driving at. And so you had fellowship with me. It's a sharing. Paul was in need. They were contributing to his need. Look, in the matter of giving and receiving, he said. Paul received, they gave. In that matter, they had fellowship. One was the giver, one was the receiver. They shared in that. Okay? Now, so we already dealt with the part B. How is this work accomplished through their appointed messenger? And we've dealt with those questions. My time's up, isn't it? All right, look at number 8 for our next class. Number 8, number 9 in our next class. And we'll begin there Wednesday, Lord willing.